Hi, Norman Solomon. Welcome to KABU.
Hello, thank you.
Norman Solomon's an American journalist, media critic, author, activist, also a KABU alumnus. His dozen books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Also the book Made Love, Got War, Close Encounters with America's Warfare State. He's very active, speaking, writing a vast number of op-eds and articles over the years in numerous outlets, left and liberal. He's been affiliated with Fairness and Accuracy in Media, also founded the Institute for Public Accuracy and the organization Roots Action. He's put his body on the line in demonstration, and he's run for and came close to winning a California seat in the Congress. And he was a great Bernie supporter, still is. Norman, you ran Bernie's operation at the Democratic National Convention. What was your role there?
Well, the Bernie Delegates Network that I coordinated was completely independent of, although supportive of, the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2016. And as a delegate for Bernie Sanders, I was coordinating that network.
As to Norman Solomon's history, again, he's a KABU alumnus, indeed got his media start right here in this radio station. Is that right?
Yes, actually, I learned how to sit and speak in front of a microphone at KABU.
Well, you've really gotten good at it. Anyway, I didn't have to twist his arm to contribute Made Love, Got War, Close Encounters with America's Warfare State, to contribute it as a premium for people who become members of KABU today during our spring membership drive. Norman, let's begin. Today, the U.S. military spends more wealth, has more power than near the whole the rest of the world combined. The U.S. is unchallenged militarily. There's no threat to this country, yet still they remain hugely aggressive, as today in Latin America and Venezuela, and also moving East European bases right to the border with Russia. So, Norman, tell us about NATO and its continuous encirclement of Russia, drawing the noose tighter. Later we can talk about the purpose of U.S. aggression, that is why they are doing it. But first, NATO and Russia and what's happening.
Really, NATO, having just marked its 70th anniversary, is something that has, on its ostensible purpose, outlived its goals, but it's not a defensive operation, as you note. It actually has engaged now in a partnership with the country of Colombia. It is talking now about doing that with Brazil. It is, after expanding post the fall of the Berlin Wall, to a dozen new countries moving eastward. It's now talking about bringing into membership Georgia, again, up on the Russian border, not the first expanded NATO country to be on the border. And I ask people, what would it seem like if a Russian-led military alliance brought into membership Canada and Mexico? Can you imagine the response out of Washington? And yet, we're encouraged to discount and ignore the concerns that the Russian government has in terms of the expansion of NATO. So this is a extremely dangerous development. It has been accelerating in the last 20 years. It began under President Clinton, it gone through Bush, gone through Obama. This is a mess. It's dangerous. It goes to the underlying militarism of U.S. policy, and what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex is running rampant.
Yeah. NATO is part of the sort of the U.S. international military effort and plays an important role. It also, though, has another, whatever, 700, 800 bases around the world and in most countries on Earth, many islands in the Pacific and Atlantic. These bases are also sort of exporting, are used as ways of training police and militaries, sometimes through treaties with countries. We really are this international military force now that's very aggressive in trying to mold the world towards its aims. Tell us about that just for a second.
The reality is that, as you allude to, the United States has approximately 800 overseas military bases. The rest of the world combined has under 40. Russia, last time I checked, had about 12 or so overseas out of their own country military bases. So Russia has a dozen, the United States has 800, and we're supposed to believe that Russia is the big threat to peace. We have, you know, an underlying challenge, which is cultural, media, and political, including electoral, where the vast majority of members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, are just on the warfare state train. And to be specific about it, if you have a congressperson like Earl Blumenauer, or if you have Senators Wyden and Merkley, where do they stand on this? Well, you know, Merkley is probably better on these issues, but all of these members of Congress need to be pushed. Ron Wyden is a militarist on these issues. And so it's not just an abstraction of what the Pentagon is doing or something far away in Washington. We all have the capacity to challenge members of the House and Senate where we live. And frankly, we have a lot better job to do than we have been doing.
This is KBOO Radio. Bill Resnick here talking to Norman Solomon, media critic, longtime critic of U.S. warfare state. We've been discussing the U.S. warfare state, the continuing military buildup, and through NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the U.S. is encircling Russia. All this wasting huge amounts of the world's resources and increasing the threat of ruinous war, as well as being unsustainable militarily and contributing to the global warming. We might get into that, a little bit of that later. Norman, no, tell us, why is this happening? What's the purpose? Who does it serve?
Well, it serves the profits of the military contracting corporations that are literally reaping billions of dollars a year in profits. So it's self-sustaining. And although, as you alluded to, it's destructive ecologically in terms of the future of the planet, it is quite lucrative and profitable for elites. And the news media on the whole, the mass media in the country, are with the program, and with very rare exceptions, elected officials in Congress as well. So it's very bad for the planet, very bad for the people who are low income, who are struggling economically in this country and around the world. It's, you know, the classic misappropriation of resources, what Martin Luther King Jr. called the madness of militarism. And so these dynamics, they're perennial. I remember way back during the Vietnam War in Portland, as around the country, many people were protesting that war. There's no less reason now to be protesting and challenging the militarism that is so corrosive and destructive.
Yeah. It also, it's not just the military industry. It seems to me that the finance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, all of the biggest companies in the United States, they all gain by controlling the politics and organization of the rest of the world. That is, they have to keep countries from, they have to maintain them like the banks. They want to continuously increase their capacity to loan and get paid for U.S. technology or whatever technology they have bought up. It's important for, it seems to me, much of the investor class in U.S. America and the hedge funds and all the rest of the top apparatus to have control of other countries so they don't break from the U.S. set up financial and money-making systems.
Well, there's no doubt. It's access to raw materials. It's access to markets and crashing into and enforcing markets. It's the sort of a loan shark activities of the IMF and the World Bank, various ways that as the financial sector, the transactional financial industries, all of that and more is benefiting from and pushing forward for the military and consequent diplomatic and economic leverage and vice versa that exists. Thomas Friedman, who is supposed to be this great liberal theorist and writer-author that unfortunately many progressives seem to think at least somewhat highly of, he's basically an apologist and an advocate for this kind of policy, and he wrote in his book, The Lexus and the Olive Tree, and I'm, you know, basically quoting here, he said, to have McDonald's around the world, you need McDonnell Douglas, meaning that to have U.S. corporations more and more effective and dominant around the planet, you need military contractors and weaponry such as that supplied by companies like McDonnell Douglas. So I think ultimately this is a challenge to not only understand what's going on, but to do something about it.
Yeah, you know, it's also, it seems to me, constantly hyping the threat of terrorism and the rest of it, or the Russians or the Iranians even, constantly hyping those threats and promising to protect America. It's a pretty useful, it has been for a very long time, channeling people's...
Well, I certainly agree with you. And the so-called Russian threat, I mean, we, the entire two-plus years we've been subjected to this barrage about Russiagate, where we know that the United States was involved deeply in interfering with and getting the election, re-election of Boris Yeltsin in 1996. Time magazine had a cover bragging about it, Yanks to the Rescue, with a drawing of Yeltsin on the cover. And then we turn around in a much more minor, from all real indications, much more minor effort from the Russian government to affect the U.S. election in 2016. All of a sudden, you have demagogues claiming on Capitol Hill that it's like Pearl Harbor. You have demagogic pseudo-journalists like Rachel Maddow on MSNBC beating this drum for 2 years, while she's not reporting as a result anywhere near as much as is needed on healthcare, education, housing, racism, anti-immigrant policies. So, frankly, you know, we, Bill, we have people listening right now who have swallowed the Russiagate stuff full. This is not something that is only being accepted or embraced by, you know, moderate to liberal Democrats. There are many people who view themselves as progressive who have bought this. And I think it's very important to challenge it. If you look at some of the great writing on this subject by Glenn Greenwald at The Intercept, what Aaron Mattei has done for The Nation magazine, it's quite debunked. But a lot of folks get into this notion that because Trump is so horrible, and he is, then any worst accusation that is made against him, we're supposed to run with. And it's a electoral loser. We know from polling that very few of the voters give it a priority. People care about, if they're in Flint, they care about what's coming out of their tap. They wonder, can their children go to college and afford to do so? Health care, there's so many issues. And the
mid- or whether the planet will survive and their kids,
well,
in fact.
Climate.
Yeah.
To talk about climate and the idea that, well, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, we can do it all. No, that's absolutely false. There's only a certain number of minutes on Rachel Maddow's show. She's devoted, according to Fair Study, in some cases, upwards of half of every hour on the average to Russiagate craziness. So this is what we used to call warmongering. Even under a much, much, much more repressive Russian regime under the Soviet Union, liberals were smart enough to applaud when Lyndon Johnson had the Spirit of Glasgow summit with Alexei Kosygin in 1967. So it's time to sort of pull up from the spiral downward that is so dangerous in terms of domestic politics as well as foreign policy.
This is KB Radio. Bill Resnick here talking to Norman Solomon, media critic, longtime critic of U.S. warfare state. We've been discussing the continuing military buildup of the U.S. warfare state, how it's impoverishing the world, creating the conditions for war, actually, and we haven't really talked about that. But any slip-up, any mistake could lead to really a horrible, even nuclear confrontation if they keep this up. And then there's the environmental apocalypse that's being ignored. And it's all enriching the most predatory companies. We discussed that. Norman, you've been working to try and stop the militarization and build a very different country for quite a long time. What do you see as the major ways of confronting this continuing militarization and predation on the world?
One aspect is to support independent progressive media such as KBOO, and also challenge the mainline media. I was mentioning MSNBC, but outlets like The Oregonian. We need to challenge the major corporate media organs and outlets, as well as build alternatives. And then political action. More and more in the last couple of years, you know, progressives who were even skeptical have seen that you don't get somebody like Rashida Tlaib or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or Ro Khanna. You don't get them into Congress unless you fight like hell to get them into Congress. And, you know, if you're not happy with somebody is in Congress representing a district out of Oregon or Washington State, then you organize and you develop credible electoral threats, run primary challenges, and get the job done. But it's a tremendously challenging undertaking. It can be done if people set their minds to it collectively.
Yeah, we even can pressure the current Congress, as, for example, in the Yemeni resolutions recently, it came close to passing, of forcing the U.S. from supporting the genocide that the Saudis are perpetrating on Yemen. There's opportunities even right now. I'm sure you agree with that. It's also, it seems to me, absolutely necessary to build movements. An electoral push is important, but it can really suck up all the energy of the left and our movements just trying to win and somehow winning those middle voters in order to then develop an electoral majority. And we sort of lose our way often. It seems to me we really have to build movements that are strong, that help people gain really strong commitments and affiliations at the local level and give people great opportunities to learn about the way they can make a difference.
Well, there's no doubt that these movements, that progressive movements that have always been responsible for what we can be proud of ultimately, the changes don't get initiated or pushed from the top, they get changed from the grassroots and the pressure and the movements. Electoral work is a subset and part of the broader necessity, I think, of the political organizing, education, agitation. And that's an ongoing necessity. You know, I think we've moved well beyond either or. We've moved to yes and in terms of electoral work and other aspects of political movement building. And so I'm quite encouraged that I think we've turned a corner. It's always daunting to go up against the corporate military establishment, and yet I think we have a lot to look forward to if we can just keep at the work.
This is Bill Resnick for KABU 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. It's Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Norman Solomon. He's made his book, Made Love, Got War, Close Encounters with America's Warfare State. He's made the book available for us as a premium in KABU's membership drive. Norman, thanks a lot for talking. You're free now for changing the world, so keep going.
And you too, and thanks for the invitation.
Okay, so long.
They were singing, ain't no power.